Pearson Rabbit's story begins with Dr. Stephanie Pearson, a passionate OB-GYN at the height of her career. But when a shoulder injury struck during a precipitous delivery, her dreams were shattered, leaving her unable to practice medicine. Determined to make a difference, Stephanie became an advocate for her peers, guiding them through the complex disability process. Stephanie founded Pearson Rabbit, a company determined to approach insurance differently. It's hard to imagine that a sudden illness or injury could leave you and your family in a devastating financial situation. Visit PearsonRabbits.com today to schedule your consultation with a Pearson Rabbits advisor.
Financial Residency is proud to bring you Grand Rounds with Dr. Tammy. Each week, Tammy Krause explores a new topic related to achieving financial independence by building and protecting your wealth. She invites guests who are experts in their fields who will share honest and valuable advice on a variety of topics. If you have an idea for a podcast, please email Tammy, that's T-A-M-M-Y, at financialresidency.com. Now grab your front row seat to this week's Grand Rounds.
Hi, and welcome back to Grand Rounds. Match season and graduation season are almost upon us, which means there's going to be an influx of new doctors and attendings who are looking for a new home. For those who have never purchased a home, it can be really exciting, but it can also be overwhelming, trying to navigate the world of realtors and banks. This industry speaks its own language, just like we do in medicine. So I have invited Doug Krause with BMO Bank, who you might also know from his podcast, The Mortgage Minute. Welcome to the show, Doug. So I've heard you tell doctors on the phone quite a bit that before they go out and find that perfect house, and realize maybe they don't qualify for as much house as they think they might, that it's actually important to talk to the bank first and kind of go through a pre-approval process. Can you talk to us a little bit about that first?
Yeah, things have changed a lot with interest rates being so different than they were for previous people coming out of residency or even going into residency. The affordability factor is just significantly different when rates are sixes and sevens versus high threes or even low threes from 2 years ago. So very important, because I get a lot of, especially residents, pretty shocked at what they don't qualify for versus what their expectation was. So pretty disappointing to go out and find the house that you want first, only to be told after the fact, hey, you can't actually afford that house, when you then start looking at something less than what you had your heart set on, is definitely a kind of a downer for the whole process.
I can imagine. So when a doctor reaches out to you the first time, you do like a pre-qualification or pre-approval, or what's the process when they reach out to you?
Usually I like to set up a call and just go over all their questions to see, you know, what their questions are. And then I like to fill in stuff that maybe they didn't ask that I think they needed to know. But I think it's important to get pre-approved, not just pre-qualified, prior to actually meeting with the realtor to go out and look at houses. Realtors on the listing side and sellers just feel much more comfortable if they've got somebody that's already been through underwriting where their credit, income, and assets are approved, as opposed to somebody that's just had a conversation with a lender. So it's always my recommendation to get a full pre-approval. And the problem is a lot of people procrastinate because I know they're all busy at this time of year.
Sure.
But if you come to us on a Friday night, you're going to be able to get a pre-qual letter, but underwriters don't work nights and weekends. And the pre-qualification is quick, but the pre-approval nowadays is taking anywhere from 3 to 5 days.
So the difference being pre-qualification, they just tell you like, hey, I make whatever, $200,000 a year. My credit score is XYZ. And you say, well, you should qualify for this amount, versus pre-qualification, they actually submit documents, go through underwriting, and it's ready to go, you know, pending a few, you know, minor things when they actually find the house.
So pre-qualification is one of two things. It's either that conversation on the phone, things are going to look good when you do apply, or it actually is the application and credit pull, not necessarily providing any of the documents like pay stubs and bank statements and employment contracts, or even if they did supply that, but we didn't have enough time to send it to an underwriter, my team giving out, and we will issue a letter called a pre-qualification letter, that just doesn't carry the same weight with listing agents and sellers as a full pre-approval letter, which again takes 3 to 5 days at this point. And that clock doesn't start ticking until you've filled out the app and we've collected all of those documents. The underwriter just won't even look at something until we have everything.
Okay. Now, staying on the banking side before we move over to, you know, the realtor side, finding your house, et cetera, can you talk to us about what makes up a physician loan? Like, why would someone, you know, going through residency or becoming an attending want a physician loan?
Physician loans have a few benefits. And for starters, other than a few states, some lenders differ, but for BMO specifically, all but 7 states, we offer 100% financing to $1 million. So that's a big benefit over a non-physician loan. We also allow 4 months reserves, possibly even 2 months if it's a smaller loan, where typical non-physician loans are going to have higher reserve requirements to get approved. A big one I think most people recognize is the lack of PMI. So most non-physician loans, if you're not doing 20% down, require PMI. PMI is private mortgage insurance. So basically it's an insurance policy you're paying for on a monthly basis, but it's for the bank's protection that if you default, they kick in and take part of the loss for us. We forego needing that or requiring that on physician loans because they're low risk loans. And another thing about a physician loan would be that they allow you to close up to 90 days before your job starts. So that's another big benefit that typically Fannie does allow in certain circumstances borrowers to close, but the reserve requirements are substantial compared to this loan. If it's 60 days or less before the job starts, then it's just the 2 or 4 months reserves versus over 60, but less than 90, then it's only one additional month. So the max you're going to need is 5 times the payment, and that can be retirement funds too. It doesn't even need to be liquid.
Okay. So reserves is basically money that you have in the bank and retirement up to 2 to 4 times the amount of the payment that you're going to have to make, right?
Yes. Or potentially up to 5 times the payment if it's a loan over 400,000 and they want to close more than 60, but less than 90 days. And that's, like I said, the other big benefit of the doctor loan is moving across the country. A lot of times it's just right before a job starts, you need to close on a house before you get settled in, so you have time to make the move, which a lot of other loans don't allow for that.
And then I kind of alluded to the fact that you guys speak your own language, use a lot of acronyms like DTI and PITI. Can you just kind of go over some of the most common acronyms and what they mean?
Most common ones will be PITI, which stands for principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. The P&I is the front half of that payment. That's the payment portion to pay back the loan. That's principal and interest. And then the TI would be adding in the monthly taxes and insurance. Another big one, obviously, is the PMI. That's private mortgage insurance, which anybody that's offering a loan that has private mortgage insurance is not a real physician loan. And then another very common one is ARMs, ARMs, or adjustable rate mortgages. And those tend to be cheaper rates than 30-year fixed, but they come with their own negatives or downsides taking them. So they have their place for sure. It just depends on the borrower. There's no one-size-fits-all circumstance to say never take an ARM or always take an ARM because everybody's situation's a little different.
And then I know I've heard you talking to people about like refinancing loans if rates go down over the next year or two versus modifying a loan. Can you tell us what those two things mean and maybe like cost differences for the two?
So BMO specifically, and I know probably 25% of the market actually offers something like this. It doesn't get shared with borrowers for various reasons, but definitely like to educate people to know to ask about this is BMO offers a rate modification program that after borrowers close the loan, and this really is important based on the idea that interest rates are probably going to go down here in the next 6 to 18 months. So once rates go down, most people, the idea would be, hey, I'm going to refinance because I'm going to get a cheaper rate and it makes sense. That's going to cost about the same thing purchase closing costs were, which could be maybe as low as 4,000, could be as high as 10 plus thousand, maybe even more on the East Coast. But part of those fees potentially wouldn't be on a refinance because there's transfer taxes and you're not actually transferring ownership. But even so, let's say $8,000 to do a typical refinance, this rate modification basically just cuts to the chase to the very end and says, come back to us and you're going to refinance. We're just going to give you the rate you would have received on a refinance, but not actually make you close it. And the fee for that is $1,000 for loans under $1 million or $1,500 for loans between $1 and $2 million. So it's a great alternative to actually needing to refinance.
And when they do like a rate modification with your bank or another bank that offers it as well, they also don't have to go through that process of providing you new paperwork or getting title insurance or all of those things that would go along with the refinance. Is that right?
Correct. It's just the one fee. There's no new appraisal, no other lender fees, no new title work because you're actually keeping the loan you already closed. You're just changing the rate and therefore the payment to go along with it. So it's a fantastic benefit. And with my bank, I will say it's not going to be written into the note to say it's guaranteed. It's just a perk that we offer, but don't really see any reason that we would ever do away with it because part of the reason that we do it is it's good for the customer. It retains business that we've already got. We're obviously smart enough to know people are going to refinance if rates go down. Thinking about it from our perspective, if rates were 8% and then all of a sudden they drop quickly to 7%, our entire book of business for the last 2 years that closed loans at the higher rate are all going to come back at once and say, I need to refinance. We just don't have the capacity to tie up all of our underwriters and processors' time to go through and requalify only to put back a loan we already know was good that we gave you the money the first time back on the books again. So it's easier to just say, let's just skip to the end, give you that rate. We're going to charge you that $1,000 or $1,500 and then move on. So it ends up being one or two pages. The borrower signs super quick. Don't have to worry about new appraisal valuation. The only thing that we do different would be a soft credit check. So if your credit improved, you get the new rate based on the better credit scores. If your credit has a lower score than it did when you purchased it, then the refinance rate may not be as good as it would have been had you maintained the same credit score.
And then I've heard you tell a lot of doctors lately that just the industry in general for physician loans has changed a lot over the last year. Can you tell us what's been going on there?
So it's drastically different this year. And I mean, the volume of business is really probably the same, but the number of people available to service that similar volume is substantially cut. There's just been so many banks, without naming specific banks, that just backed out of the space. There's another national bank completely out. There's one that fired 300 loan officers. They all just decided they didn't want portfolio loans this year, which is a loan that they keep on their books. And doctor loans generally end up being portfolio loans. In order to not add to their portfolio, they just cleaned house and said, we only want lenders that are going to do FHA, VA, or loans that we can sell to Fannie. And because of that, I would say there's probably at least a third of the options that people had last year are gone. BMO has actually expanded. I mean, we're running strong, haven't really contracted anywhere. Something else that's changed tremendously from last year, and I don't want to bore people with too much banking jargon, but it's called Basel III. And basically, the Fed has put higher requirements on banks for reserves to make high loan-to-value loans. That was another acronym I missed, LTV. Whenever banks are making 90, 95, and 100% loans, we have to hold more reserves than we used to, which makes it more expensive for us. Because if you think about if we have to hold twice as much money to make that same loan, that's two loans we could have made before this rule went into effect. So in essence, they've made 95s and even 90s more expensive than they used to be. So that's resulted in higher interest rates. People are going to start seeing a lot bigger difference between something below 90% versus say a 95 or 100%. So an easy way around that for me is somebody that's doing 10% down, just make it 10.1 because the rule doesn't apply for loans less than 90%. So just putting anything more than 10% down gets you a substantially better rate. I would say on average, 3/8 to even 0.5% better rate than a 95 or 100% loan.
And with that first major change that you talked about, with there being fewer lenders, fewer banks that are doing physician loans, what does that mean to the individual doctor who's going to come to you for a mortgage? How does that impact the individual?
I mean, I'm just insanely busy because, you know, I have a good reputation that I'm getting 30, 40, 50 phone calls a day. So it's not something that you potentially are just going to pick up the phone, get me on the phone and get all the answers you want immediately. So it's always good to plan ahead. I definitely want to get to everybody, take care of everybody, get you all your answers. But it's not something that you want to procrastinate and wait till the last minute, because if you do, then you're going to be going into a weekend that you don't have your pre-qual or pre-approval letter because you couldn't get in touch with a banker to start the process and get everything squared away ahead of looking at houses. And I think it's very important that you take care of the financial piece before you start looking at the houses, getting the cart ahead of the horse, so to speak, because back to my original statement, it's very, very disappointing to later find out that you can't actually qualify for what you thought you could. And then you've kind of got your heart set on a certain level, a price level of home, and then have to start looking at something less than that. It's just not a good experience. So plan ahead. And I literally have some residents right now that are reaching out to say, I'm just looking into things that I'm a 2025 graduate. That sounds crazy, but I mean, during match season is probably not the right time to do it, like maybe this fall, but 6 months plus ahead of time is not too soon to talk to a banker just to get your ducks in a row, because if there's ever any issues with credit, then you've got plenty of time to look into fixes and alternatives, or just set your expectations so you know what it is you're going to be looking for and expecting whenever the time does come.
That's good advice. Now, let's say that the physician kind of has their lender in order. They know what they qualify. What's the next step? You know, what recommendations do you have for choosing a realtor or starting to shop for your home? You know, what do you have there for recommendations?
One of the best resources is always new coworkers who they had as their realtor and a good experience. Checking with your lender. If you have family or friends in the area, if you're relocating, that's always a nice place to check too. I'm not saying you can't get a good realtor, just luck of the draw, but if you have any of those options, I always look to somebody else that's already had experience. I really like realtors that are part of the lifestyle. There's lots of realtors out here that are married to physicians, so they actually understand the time constraints involved and work maybe more freely with that than some realtors that are just, hey, I'm available Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And there's not that many realtors that's the case, but some of them just won't quite understand really the restrictions that doctor families have on time frame, especially as they finish up residency or even med school, but probably residency especially. Something else, as you're working with realtors and you go to make offers, I hate the advice of this is the only way you're going to get the house is waiving appraisal contingencies and cramming closing dates down. Everybody's not going to be happy whenever somebody writes a 15-day offer and then the appraisal takes too long or whatever the case is. Really have to set your realtor's expectations that maybe if you're not a cash buyer, you may not be able to close a loan in 15 days. 21 is actually a pretty fast closing, and I do those regularly. 30 days seems like a lifetime anymore, but there's a lot of lenders that need more than 30. So you should just make sure you ask those questions of your lender that you're choosing and don't let a realtor back you into the corner to say, waive your finance contingency, waive your appraisal contingency, because they're putting your money at risk. To me, if you're okay with that, as long as you understand what you're agreeing to, then that's different. But a lot of times I see people waiving finance contingencies. They don't really understand. That means that you're telling somebody that your loan's done, ready to go. And if you're waiving your appraisal contingency, you're saying, I don't care what the house appraises for. If it comes in short, I'm buying it anyway, and I'm going to pay the difference out of pocket. Then people don't actually sometimes have that money. And then they risk, you know, subjecting their earnest money to loss because of what they just agreed to.
And then I know I've heard you talking to some people that tried to put in like a 14-day close. And if they waive like the, if they don't put in that contingency ahead of time and say it takes 21 days to close to get the appraisal fee, they're also at risk of losing their earnest money in that situation too, correct?
They are. And, you know, then you're at the mercy of the seller. And more times than not, if a seller agreed and they're, you know, more or less down that rabbit hole with you for 2 weeks, then they're probably going to give you the extensions. But at the same time, they don't have to. You could then have spent money on an appraisal, spent money on a home inspection, and then the seller just says, hey, sorry, I've now had three or four more offers better than yours. You're now out of contract, and they can just walk away and don't have to give you any options at that point. So if you don't meet the timeline of your contingencies you put in your contract, you're basically out of contract, opening Pandora's box that seller, if they have a better option, may choose to go with it instead of you. So ask for appropriate timelines. And again, you're not going to know what those timelines are until you discuss them with your lender specifically, not your realtor, because the realtor is not doing the loan, the lender is. So make sure that you're getting an appropriate amount of time. For me, you know, 10 days for appraisal, 10 to 14 days for loan contingency, and 21 days for a close timeline is pretty reasonable, with the exception, I will say, condos. They tend to require paperwork on the back end, like condo questionnaires, that sometimes those HOAs are not as motivated as you are, and then they don't provide that timely. You don't get your loan underwritten in a timely fashion. So condos, I would say, just assume you're going to take a week longer when you're buying a condo.
What are some other common mistakes that you've seen people make over the years that you'd advise caution?
Falling so much in love with the house that they chase it to the point of overpaying. I mean, I don't want to say for everybody a house needs to be an investment, because it needs to be your home first and foremost. But at some point, you're going to want to sell the house, and getting caught up in a bidding war to the point of, I really have to have this house. Every time that somebody has gotten outbid, guess what? They found the next house that worked out, and there's more than one house for everybody. So don't get so caught up in the hype of a bidding war. And unfortunately, I think those days are coming back, because rates and prices work in inverse order. So as the rates start to come down, the prices are going to start to go up. And we're getting to that season where it becomes more and more competitive. And the biggest problem right now in the market is lack of inventory. So that puts the sellers in the driver's seat. And the cause for the lack of inventory is probably the low rates from 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, if you think about all the people sitting in 3% loans, they don't want to sell those houses to turn around and have to go buy a new house at 6 or 7%. So as rates come down, maybe it'll finally nudge them to say, I really need to move, and I'm finally going to give up my 3% house to go buy something at the current market rate. But it's just not something I advise, putting yourself in a bad situation, especially on these loans where a lot of them are low or sometimes no equity at all to start with. If you pay top of market, even over what it's really worth, as soon as rates start to go up again, if that happens, the prices might come down. Then you could actually be upside down in your house. So just be mindful that there's no house is worth putting yourself or your finances at risk of being stuck, so to speak, because if you don't have the money to then write a check to get rid of a house, then you really just are stuck, or you're going to end up with bad credit and you won't be able to get the next house.
And I know you have to give more individual advice. Do you have any general advice for people as far as credit goes? If someone has, you know, a lower credit score, is there anything they can start doing now to improve that before they're ready to buy a house?
The credit scores themselves, more times than not, the culprit, if people are surprised when I tell them what their credit scores are, is two reasons. One, people look at credit card apps or Credit Karma, stuff like that. That's a consumer credit score. So those tend to be higher than a mortgage credit score, and they actually grade out differently. And the biggest difference between them is a consumer credit does not really factor in as much credit utilization versus a mortgage absolutely does. So if you have a credit card with a $10,000 credit limit, the perfect situation is keep it below 30%. So you don't want to have a credit card that you owe, or I'm sorry, has a limit of $10,000, run it up to $9,000 because it's got a teaser, you know, zero rate for a year or something. Because when you do that, your credit's going to instantly plummet on a mortgage credit report, because now it looks like you use 90% of your available credit and you're credit irresponsible for, it's all a computer making these decisions. It looks at the usage of your credit. So make sure to keep all your credit cards below 30%. And my biggest trick to keep people at that, people look at it and say, well, I need to buy something big. How you get around that is prepay the credit card before you make that charge. So if you had a $10,000 limit, you need to make a $5,000 purchase, pay it to a negative $2,500 balance. So when your $5,000 charge hits, you're now at $2,500 because you started in the hole, charged the $5,000, and then you're still below the 30% threshold. Very important to keep your credit scores as high as possible, because it makes such a big difference right now between especially the 90, 95, and 100%. They're punishing on rate if you have lower credit scores. With us, it starts to make a huge difference below 720. Ideally, you want to see credit scores of 760 plus, and you're not going to get there if you have credit cards that have 50, 60, 70% utilization.
Any other words of advice that you want to throw out for the new home buyer today?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. You can also request a copy of my book. The website I normally give it away is down currently, but anybody that wants a copy of it, Hippocratic House, could just email me at Doug.Krause, that's C-R-O-U-S-E, at BMO.com. Happy to give you a copy of it. We send out a few hundred copies a month and love to throw your name on the list too.
That sounds good. And if anyone wanted to get in touch with you and ask questions about a loan, how would they get in touch with you, Doug?
DougKrause.com. That will take you back to a page that has my email and phone number. You can also text me. And again, with match season, it's actually already here, at least from a lending standpoint. It'd be hard just to pick up the phone and call me, but I have on my email, if you shoot me an email, I've got a calendar invite. You can set up an appointment or you can send me a text. You can call me, but you're probably going to end up leaving a voicemail. But all of that contact information is on my page at DougKrause.com.
That sounds good. Well, thanks for coming on and just trying to demystify the home buying process for us today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. And again, Doug has a podcast here on financial residency as well called The Mortgage Minute. And every week he tries to give, you know, some updates on the market or, you know, home buying tips or whatever he thinks might help people based on current information. So you can always tune in there. And I would like to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to Grand Rounds this week. I hope you'll be back next week with us. Now a final word from our sponsor. At Pearson Rabbits, they understand that life can change in an instant. Visit www.pearsonrabbits.com today and embark on a journey of safeguarding your future.